He is incomparable. That is how, this few nights ago, someone told me about, there's a website called desiringgod.org. And on there, there's this conference from 2006, and the whole conference was about this subject, the supremacy of Christ in a postmodern world. And the very first speaker at this conference, that was a statement that he said. He paused, and I'm like, wait a minute, here's this guy at a Christian conference, and he says, Jesus Christ is not great. He's incomparable. The postmodern world, the world in which nothing is sure, this is postmodernism. There is, in art, in music, in knowledge, nothing is sure. Everything is reality as you see it. That's the world in which you and I live now. That is what this city is. The other day, some of you guys know Dan Crichton. Dan Crichton is starting a church in Cranston called the Grace Bible Church. He came and saw me. We were here for a few hours Monday. And he and I were talking about the big difference between the culture that we live in now compared to when our dads came here. I mean, when my dad came to Rhode Island in 1975... And I remember in the 80s growing up in our neighborhood and all the guys on our street, there were certain things everybody accepted. They accepted the fact that God exists. They accepted the authority of the Bible. They didn't really want to hear it, but they accepted that the Bible had authority. That was the culture into which Sam Strickland, Tom Crichton, Archie Emerson, all these guys who came here back in the 70s came into. But now here we are, and now we're in 2008, and the American culture, the thought process, especially where we are, is very different. What we're starting off with at all these people is that I don't know if God exists, so I don't accept that. That's where we're starting. And it's into this world that Down City Church, it's into this world, and just like we said this on Sunday in Acts 17, that's the world that Paul went into in Athens. One person. Now, that's the culture out there that we're entering into, okay? It's the postmodern world. And what the message that we bring into that world, and again, we looked at Acts 17 on Sunday, about these four things that Paul says or the Bible says about God. But what we want to establish is that Christ is supreme among all the ways of thinking that exist in Providence, that exist on the campus at Brown, that exist where all these guys on all these campuses out here in the places of business and in City Hall. We're entering into that world. We're not in the Bible Belt right now. We're not in a place where everybody, again, accepts there's a God and they believe in Jesus and so forth. It's not the way it is. So in this place, where the people that come here are the people that many of them are going to leave here in their lifetime and go all over the world and be the leaders of culture, the way people think, it's in their lives that we're entering into with this church, with this message. That among every possible idea and philosophy that you think, we're here to say this, Jesus Christ is supreme. He's superior. Now, there may be some of us here tonight that are gathered here in this group of professing believers. And I want to ask you tonight, are you tired of fighting against sin? And you feel like it's useless because it feels impossible that you will have victory. Do any of you feel that way tonight? Are there some of us here tonight that I want to ask you this question? Does it ever sometimes seem appealing to you to just abandon Christianity and go back into the world? Are there some here tonight that it seems hard to believe that God really did forgive and forget all of your sins, and that you no longer have to have any guilt? Do you have a hard time believing that? How about this? Are there some of you here tonight struggling to believe God because it doesn't seem like His Word is coming to pass in your life? And you're having a hard time believing that He's even there. Or, I wonder if there's anyone among us tonight, you struggle with the assurance of your salvation. Tonight we're going to begin to look at a book of the Bible that I feel so strongly about this book of the Bible right now that I made it official. I went on Facebook tonight and said I think it's my favorite book of the New Testament, the book of Hebrews. I don't know how many of you guys have ever read a book that you say, you know what, there's a book that I've read. I'm not talking about the Bible now, but maybe there's a book that you've read sometime in your life that you've never ever, that book just so impacted you. I can think of one that I would say absolutely for sure. Sometimes you read some, they're really encouragement for a time, and then you kind of forget about them. There's one that I would say absolutely outside of the Bible, and it's the book Don't Waste Your Life by John Piper. But the book of Hebrews, and we're going to give it basically tonight, what I want us to do is I want us to kind of get in an airplane and kind of just fly over Hebrews. And then for about 6 weeks, Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, I want to go right through Hebrews. So about 6 to 8 weeks, we're going to go through the whole thing. But in this great, I think that this book of the New Testament, certainly every question that I just brought up just now is going to deal with it so thoroughly. And it's also going to establish, it really what I'm going to believe is the theme of Hebrews, and that is this: the superiority of Jesus Christ and the absolute necessity that you continue to believe and follow Him. This is what Hebrews is saying. Hebrews is going to argue for many, many chapters in display, and that's, and we have, as we have guests come in here on Sunday and Wednesday, we're going to pray about that. They will hear established in their minds and hearts that Jesus Christ is superior to anything you've ever believed. And then to all of us who currently do believe, we are going to be challenged so point blank to continue believing and to follow Him. Now, a couple years ago, when I was still at First Baptist, you guys remember that I went to Indonesia right after the tsunami. And when I went to Indonesia, one of the things we did, of course, that was an incredibly long flight. We flew to Detroit, Michigan, from Detroit to Japan. That's a real long, real long one. And on the way there, one of the things we did was fly over a place of God's earth that I still want to go to, and it looked incredible from the windows of that airplane, 30-something thousand feet. It was the state of Alaska. And I looked out there, and I saw mountains and mountains, I mean, incredible peaks. And I said, man, one of these days I really want to go there. But what I want to do tonight is just kind of take a brief fly over Hebrews to kind of get the main... I want to prove to you what I'm arguing is the theme of Hebrews. The superiority of Jesus Christ and the absolute necessity that every one of us continues to believe and to follow Him. You must. And I want to see this tonight, and then we're going to dive in. And then starting Sunday, we're going to start to go right down inside into Alaska, and we're going to see how it all fills out. Let's see how this... Let's take this look here. The first thing that Hebrews argues is this. Again, superior of Jesus Christ. Number one, He is superior over angels. Look at chapter 1, verse 4. Chapter 1 and verse 4 says, "Having become as much better than the angels, as He has inherited a more excellent name than they." All right, so again, I'm just going to briefly tick these off tonight. First thing, I'm going to show you that this is going on, the superiority of Jesus Christ. The first thing he argues, chapter 1 into halfway into chapter 2, is that Jesus Christ is, first of all, superior to any angelic being. Now look how he basically applies that then. Look at chapter 1, verse 7 and 8. "And of the angels," he says, "who makes His angels winds and His ministers a flame of fire, but of the Son," he says, "Your throne, O God, is forever and ever, and the righteous scepter is the scepter of His kingdom." There's a contrast between angelic beings and Jesus Christ. Look at verse 13. But to which of the angels, chapter 1, has he ever said, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet? In chapter 2, in verses 5 through 8, for he did not subject to angels the world to come, concerning which we are speaking. But one has testified somewhere saying, what is man that you remember him, or the son of man that you are concerned about him? You have made him for a little while lower than the angels. You have crowned him with glory and honor, and have appointed him over the works of your hands. You have put all things in subjection under his feet. In that first section of Hebrews chapter 1 to the first half of chapter 2, he is saying this first of all, Jesus Christ is superior to any angelic being. And basically the urge, and we're going to see this in detail, the urge to all of us is listen to him. See, look at chapter 2 briefly, okay, verse 1. Because he is superior, this section is arguing, we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard so that we would not drift away from it. For if the word spoken through angels proved unalterable, which is the Old Testament, and every transgression and disobedience received a just penalty, how will we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, after it was at the first spoken through the Lord? Okay, instead of angels, this message is spoken by the Lord, who is so much more superior to them. And if their word was unalterable, how much more is the Lord's word? Okay? So that is the opening argument of Hebrews. He's superior to angels. The second thing that Hebrews tells us is he's superior over Moses. Look at chapter 3 in verses 1 through 6. Therefore, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, consider Jesus, the apostle and high priest of our confession. Some of you guys know, what does the word apostle mean? Right, the messenger. Jesus is the messenger of what we believe now. Consider him the messenger and the high priest of what we believe. He was faithful to him who appointed him, as Moses also was in all his house. For he has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, by just so much as the builder of the house has more honor than the house. In other words, okay, Jesus is the builder of the house. He has more honor than Moses. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. Now look at the difference between Moses and Jesus, verse 5. Now Moses was faithful in all his house as a servant for a testimony of those things which were to be spoken later, but Christ was faithful as a son. See, Moses is a faithful servant. Jesus is a faithful son over his house, whose house we are if we hold fast our confidence and the boast of our hope firm until the end. And again, that's the second part of the theme of Hebrews. Continue to believe and follow Jesus. What you're trusting in is absolutely superior, and you must hang on to it. Look at chapter 7, verse 18 to 22. Jesus is superior over Moses, and even more in detail, what happens in chapter 17, verse 18, is that his covenant is superior to Moses' covenant. Chapter 7, verse 18. For on the one hand, there is a setting aside of a former commandment because of its weakness and uselessness, for the law made nothing perfect. And on the other hand, there is a bringing in of a better hope, through which we draw near to God. And inasmuch as it was not without an oath, for they indeed became priests without an oath, but he with an oath, through the one who said to him, the Lord has sworn and will not change his mind, you are a priest forever. So much the more also Jesus has become the guarantee of a better covenant. Not only is it better, look at chapter 8 and verse 13. He says, when he said a new covenant, he has made the first obsolete. But whatever is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to disappear. Jesus is so superior over Moses, the New Testament over the Old Testament, that the New Testament has rendered the Old Testament obsolete as far as its way of obtaining righteousness. Look at chapter 10, verses 11 through 14. Every priest stands daily ministering and offering time after time the same sacrifices which can never take away sins. But he, and by the way, you see that grammatical thing going on many, many times in Hebrews, but Jesus, but he, having offered one sacrifice for sins for all time, sat down at the right hand of God, unlike these guys, right, who daily minister, waiting from that time onward until his enemies be made a footstool for his feet. For by one offering he has perfected for all time those who are sanctified. Jesus Christ is superior over any possible other idea. There are most people that we're going to meet down here. You name the religion. They will basically argue in some form or another that the way, if there is a God, to get to Him is by adhering to some type of laws. I've talked to Hindus, all different ones. And what the Bible presents is that Jesus Christ is superior over Moses, over that entire... As a matter of fact, it's rendered that way to God obsolete. The third way that Jesus Christ is superior in Hebrews, He's superior over angelic beings. He is superior over Moses, which, of course, even Islam acknowledges the incredible, this great leader. But thirdly, He is superior over the Old Testament high priest. Look at chapter 7, verse 23 to 28. Jesus Christ is superior to the Old Testament high priest. Chapter 23 of verse 7 says, "The former priest, on the one hand, existed in greater numbers because they were prevented by death from continuing. But Jesus, on the other hand, because He continues forever, holds His priesthood permanently. Therefore, He is able also to save forever those who draw near to God through Him, since He always lives to make intercession for them. For it was fitting for us to have such a high priest, holy, innocent, undefiled, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens, who does not need daily, like those high priests, to offer up sacrifices first for His own sins, and then for the sins of the people, because this He did once for all when He offered up Himself. For the law appoints men as high priests who are weak, but the word of the oath, which came after the law, appoints a son made perfect forever." I'm going to look at two verses or two sections that apply this now. Look at chapter 8 and verse 6. "But now Jesus has obtained a more excellent ministry, by as much as He is also the mediator of a better covenant, which has been enacted on better promises." Jesus has a more excellent ministry. He has a better covenant based on better promises. Chapter 9, verse 11 through 15. "But when Christ appeared as a high priest of the good things to come, He entered to the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this creation, and not through the blood of goats and calves, but through His own blood. He entered the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling those who have been defiled sanctify for the cleansing of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered Himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? For this reason He is the mediator of a new covenant, so that, since a death has taken place for the redemption of the transgressions that were committed under the first covenant, those who have been called may receive the promise of the eternal inheritance." All right? That is the big thing that's going on here. Jesus Christ, the superiority of Jesus Christ. Now, I want to briefly say to you, and we're going to wrap up, I want to say to you how Hebrews now applies that to people. And really, there are two ways that it does. This book, and I honestly believe for all of us, if over the next 6 weeks, however long it's going to, there's about 13 chapters. We're going to want to average about a week and a chapter at a time. That we would be able to, this really could change your life if you understand. I mean, you heard what I asked you earlier? Do you struggle with assurance? Sometimes does it feel like it's hard to believe that God's forgiven and forgotten all your sins? You no longer have to have guilt. Do you struggle to believe God because it doesn't seem like His word is coming to pass in your life? Does it ever seem appealing to you to just abandon Christianity and go all the way back into the world? Are you tired of fighting against sin because it feels useless? All those kind of things are going to be dealt with so thoroughly here. But Hebrews applies to us because Jesus Christ is so superior. Look at what chapter 12 and verse 2 says. Fix our eyes on Him. Verse 3, consider Him. Chapter 3 and verse 12, don't turn there. It says, because of His superiority, take heed that you don't fall away. Chapter 6, verse 11 and 12 say to us, have the assurance of this hope because it is so, you can so trust it, and diligently wait until you inherit the promises. In chapter 10, verse 22, look at chapter 10, verse 22 and 23, applies it this way. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for He who promises is faithful. Verse 23. He is going to exhort all of us. And when we're done here in about 6 weeks, the purpose of Hebrews is that every single one of us will absolutely be convinced in our heart that Jesus Christ is superior over any other possible thought I might be having right now. And I am so convinced to believe and to follow Him and to never fall away. That's the purpose of Hebrews. I want you to look at one last verse and we're done. And this is what's going to be so strengthening you, chapter 11 and verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Last night, I was lying awake in my comfortable Tempur-Pedic. And all of a sudden, it really hit me, this verse. I was like, wow. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for. In other words, I am so absolutely sure that it's going to happen, I go live that day banking on that what I am convinced is going to happen is going to happen. And so I totally live my life based on that assurance. I am absolutely convicted and convinced of what I haven't seen yet. And because I'm so convinced of it, everything that I do right now, although I may not see certain things yet, I'm so convinced of the superiority of Jesus Christ, it affects me in all the specific ways I just asked those questions to you about. Now, I mentioned to you guys Facebook here in the beginning. The other day, I saw, they have this little feature on Facebook you guys know about. It's called Pieces of Flair. And you get these little buttons, and these buttons that people can put on your profile and say something about yourself, you know. Well, I've seen this little button one time, and this is incredibly bold. And one day I'm going to try it when I feel really confident about whoever this is going to be. There's a button on the piece of flair that says, I'm going to marry you, plan your life accordingly. Now, that takes a lot of guts. If you're going to send that button, you better, I think, wow, man, that's incredible. All right. Now, if a person were to send that button to someone, that piece of flair, I'm going to marry you, plan your life accordingly. That is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. I'm telling you, start living your life because it's going to happen. Now, when we get done with Hebrews, that's exactly what's going to happen in our heart. God is going to display to us the absolute superiority of Jesus Christ over every possible thought that I may have against Him. And so much so that when I get done, I will be convinced to believe and to follow Him and plan my life accordingly. Now let's ask God to give us that kind of absolute convinced belief.